remember reading of a great day in the year 1775, when certain farmers took their guns in their hands and gathered in little groups along the road that led from Lexington and Massachusetts to Boston. And there quietly lay in order to intercept British troops who had come upon an errand aimed at the liberties of the colony. And I've often heard since that day men speak of the embattled farmers at Lexington. Well, there are going to be embattled farmers again in the history of this country. Not with guns in their hands, but with ballots in their hands. Who are going to come back and claim the sovereignty which they share with the rest of the people of the United States. I do not wish anything I say to be understood as embattling the farmers against any other great legitimate interest in this country. Because our task at the present moment is the task of understanding one another so thoroughly that there will be only one cause, only one purpose, and men acting together can lift all the levels of our political life. The farmers of this country, however, are in a very interesting position. I have seen the interest of a great many classes specially regarded in legislation, but I must frankly say that I have never seen the interest of the farmer very often regarded in legislation. And one of the greatest impositions upon the farmers of this country that had ever been devised is the present tariff legislation of the United States. I have never heard anybody but orators on the stump say that the tariff was intended for the benefit of the farmer. When the United States was the granary of the world, the farmers were not looking for protection. And while they were not looking, everything else had duties put upon it. And the cost of everything that they had to use was raised upon them. Until now, it is almost impossible for them to make a legitimate profit. While you were feeding the world, Congress was feeding the trust. I wish again to disavow all intention of suggesting to the farmer that he go in and do somebody else. All that I am suggesting to you is that you break into your own house and live there. And I want you to examine very critically the character of the tenants who have been occupying it. The rent has been demanded of you, and not of them. You have paid the money which enabled them to live in your own house and nominate your own president. The tariff intimately concerns the farmer of this country. It makes a great deal of difference to you that Mr. Taft vetoes the steel bill. It makes a difference to you in the cost of practically every tool that you use upon the farm. And it is very significant that a Democratic House of Representatives passed the steel tariff reduction bill over the president's veto. The farmer pays just as big a proportion of the tariff duties as anybody else. What happened in the Congress which has recently adjourned? The House of Representatives, with the acquiescence of a Senate which is not democratic, passed the Farmers' Free List Bill. It put agricultural implements, lumber, shingles, cork, bagging, and ties on the free list. Then what happened to the bill? It was vetoed by the President because, consciously or unconsciously, he represents not the people of the United States, but those who have held the people's power in trust for their own purposes. We stand in the presence of an awakened nation, impatient of partisan make-believe. The nation has awakened to a sense of neglected ideals and neglected duties, to a consciousness that the rank and file of her people find life very hard to sustain, that her young men find opportunity embarrassed, and that her older men find business difficult to renew and maintain because of circumstances of privilege and private advantage which have either laced their subtle threads throughout almost every part of the framework of our present law. She has awakened to the knowledge that she has lost certain cherished liberties and wasted priceless resources which she has solemnly undertaken to hold in trust for posterity and for all mankind, and to the conviction that she stands confronted with an occasion for constructive statesmanship, such as it has not arisen since the great days in which our government was set up. There never was a time when impatience and suspicion were more keenly aroused by private power selfishly employed, when jealousy of everything concealed or touched with any purpose not least as the general good or inconsistent with it, more sharp humanity ever more susceptible to unselfish appeal or to the high arguments of sincere justice. These are the unmistakable symptoms of an awakening. There is the more need for wise counsel because the people are so ready to heed counsel if it be given honestly and in their interest. It is in the broad light of this new day that we stand face to face with great questions of right and of justice, questions of national development, of the development of character and of standards of action, no less than of a better business system, more free, more equitable, more open to ordinary men, practicable to live under, tolerable to work under, or a better fiscal system whose taxes shall not come out of the pockets of the many to go into the pockets of the few, and within whose intricacies special privilege may not so easily find cause. What is there to do? There are two great things to do. One is to set up the rule of justice and right in such matters as the tariff, the correction of the trust, and the prevention of monopoly, the adaptation of our banking and currency laws to the very duties to which our people must put them, the treatment of those who do the daily labor in our factories and mines and throughout all of our great industrial and commercial undertakings, as they should be treated in a civilized polity, and the political life of the people of the Philippines, for whom we hold governmental power in trust for their service, not our own. The other thing, the additional duty, is the great task of protecting our people and our resources, and of keeping open to the whole people the doors of opportunity through which they must, generation by generation, pass if they are to make conquest of their fortunes in health, in freedom, in peace, and in contentment. In the performance of this second great duty, we are face to face with questions of conservation and of development, questions of forests and water powers and mines and waterways, of the building of an adequate merchant marine, of the opening of every highway and facility, and the setting up of every safeguard needed by a great, industrious, expanding nation.